Okay.
All right, Rabbi, this is going to go on Y Torah probably. So anything that you want to be recorded for posterity, you can share it. Any jokes that you aren't confident that you want the 3.5 people that might listen to the Shirim Y Torah to hear, then you can think about it twice.
I'm hosting. I reserve the right to make comments.
Shai, you're welcome to say anything you want. Just know that the 3.5 people listening to the Shirim Y Torah will hear it as well.
That's fine with me. Hi, guys.
That's fine by you. So anything absurd that you hear on the Shir is from Shai's beater. Okay. From Stanford, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So our topic tonight is there a mitzvah to be masculine? And to fit the theme of the topic, Shai has said, instead of just serving cookies, that's why we're having beer, that's why we're having meat, that's why we're having this exclusively male gathering, which we would have anyway, to talk about the mitzvah of manliness. Now, it actually happens to be that the same question about is there a mitzvah to be masculine, the same question works for femininity as well. For women, is there a mitzvah for women to be feminine? But A, I'm talking to men over here. B, mitzvah and masculine is an alliteration. If someone could find me something else for feminine that is a synonym with mitzvah, you'll help me out with that, and I could get that in the title as well. Okay, so
Is this about both or just about?
It'll be about both. I think it's going to be about both. You know, we'll talk about exclusively masculine things, exclusively feminine things. Is there such a thing as something exclusively feminine, masculine? So the question in particular I want to address is, it's no secret that today, especially in Western modern society, there is an ideological trend to dissolve gender norms in general. Now, I think I need to address the elephant in the room and then say we're not talking about it, which is the question of transgender identity. I think that merits its own class. Certainly what we will discuss could very well be extrapolated to the question of transgender identity. But there's actually a book called Dor Tahapucho, Sefer Dor Tahapuchos, which means it comes up, I think, in Parshas Hazinu. It's Moshe Rabbeinu says, yeah, you guys are an upside-down generation. You guys are like inside-out, topsy-turvy. And it's an entire book just on the halachos of transgenderism. And in there he talks about how this is like the ultimate isser of lo yilvash. Now, what is lo yilvash? That's what our discussion centers around. You see, if I want to look into Torah and figure out where is there an idea of masculinity and femininity, well, we go to the isser of cross-dressing. Look at source number one on your sheet. This is just an abridged source sheet, by the way. If anyone wants the complete source sheet, you can email me and I'll send you the roughly 50 plus sources. This site got down just to chai. Lo yechli gever al isha v'lo yilbash gever simlas isha ki so avas Adonai lehechal kol osei elem. So we're told that the kli gever should not be on an isha, and a man should not wear the garment of a woman. Now note already there's a bit of a difference here. A man shall not wear a woman's garment. But for women, it doesn't say a woman shouldn't wear a man's garment, but it says she shouldn't have a kli gever. What's it mean, a kli gever? A kli usually means like a utensil, a vessel. So if you look in the second source, in the Gemara Maseches Nazir, we have the opinion of Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov. I'm going to skip the Chachamim because we're told by the Gemara Maseches Yevamos that the sheet of Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov is kav v'naki, which means he doesn't often take positions, but when he does, we know that he's usually right. You know, it's like kind of, I remember growing up always, there was like a rabbi who sat in the back of shul, very soft-spoken. He very ever hardly took a stance on anything, but you knew like if it met the threshold and he like put his foot down on something, it had to at least give you pause. Like, you know, like he's coming from a well-thought-out place. So that, I don't know about Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov's personality, but in halacha, that's how we treat him. So almost everyone after the Gemara understands that we paskin like Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov. What does Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov say in source number two? Minayin shelo teitze isha bechlei zayin lemelchama. Where do we know that a woman shall not go out to war with a weapon? That's what Klei Zayin is. Tama lomar lo yechli gever al isha. We see that there shall not be the Klei Gever, the utensils, the items of a man shall not be upon a woman. And v'lo yilbash gever simlas isha. Now, what's the prohibition against a man? Shlo yitakein ish b'sikune isha. That a man shall not adorn himself, shall not fix himself up with tikune isha, which is generally understood to be cosmetics, but I think it could be understood more broadly. So, let's pause for a moment. Our question is, nowadays, well, let's back up. Back then, it's very clear. Back in the day, women are not supposed to wield weapons. Men are not supposed to wear cosmetics of a woman. By the way, this is very novel, because if all you did was look at the pasuk, I would think we had a very narrow prohibition of cross-dressing. Men shouldn't wear skirts, women shouldn't wear a yarmulke. But it seems from Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, we pasuk, like, he really expands the prohibition of lo yilvash. Just a key term. That's lo yilvash is the prohibition we're talking about here. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, not only should a woman, let's say, not wear military fatigues, but also she's not allowed to bear arms. So in theory, I don't know, maybe she is going to the shooting range an issue? Well, he says not going out to war. What's interesting here is we see not only is wearing something of the opposite gender problematic, but possibly conducting oneself, acting like the opposite gender, also might violate this prohibition. Similarly for a man, it's not just a man wearing women's clothing, but a man grooming himself like a woman as well. Lest you say that means literally, let's say it literally means makeup that he's putting on. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah talks about a man is not supposed to stare in the mirror for too long because that was a feminine thing to do. It doesn't mean, I think, you know, briefly looking, you know, in the mirror, okay, good, I could, I combed myself, I could go. But it means gazing into the mirror, it would be problematic. Which, side note, by the way, there's this very interesting Targum Yerushalmi, I think it's a Targum Yerushalmi, which talks about why Yosef was known to be a little bit of a, sounds a little irreverent, a pretty boy. And Dina was the Yitzhanis. Dina went out, and that's ultimately the whole episode with Shechem. Because what happened was Leah was supposed to have another son, and Rachel was supposed to have a daughter, but then things got switched around. But when that switch happened between Leah and Rachel, metaphysically / physically, Dina retained some masculine qualities. Yosef retained some feminine qualities. So Yosef was a pretty boy. Dina was a girl who was willing to get out of the house, get out of the kitchen, and to see the entire world. So that, you know, that's just a little bit of a side point over there. But if I were to stop over here, what other, you know, I'm feeding you all of my inferences that I made looking at the Gemara. And, okay, admittedly looking at commentaries afterwards. But you looking at this line here in the Gemara, what do you see in terms of the scope of the prohibition of lo yilvash? And number two, let me ask you, what do you think the implications might be for today on the practical level? If you were to take the Isser of lo yilvash and apply it to modern day circumstances, what kind of issues do you think might come up?
So the first thing that occurs to me is a woman couldn't serve in the U.S. Army.
Ah.
And then Israel overall couldn't allow any women to serve in their army if Israel's being a halachic country.
So right. So Daniel, you make a very good observation, which is this doesn't seem to comport, well, certainly with the U.S. military, but certainly the IDF is where this big question comes to the fore. And by the way, this is a huge debate within the religious Zionist community. The more right-wing side of the religious Zionist community points exactly to this Gemara and to subsequent literature and says it's very explicit. A woman going to the military violates lo yilvash. So we have Sheirut Lumi, there's National Service. I would add, by the way, that there's a misconception that serving the military automatically means you're in combat. There's a lot of things you can do in the military. You know, you can be in the band, you can be in the kitchen, you could be on the computers and intelligence. So, I think one could say a woman could serve in the military, but not in a combat unit. In fact, I think you actually would go to Israel and you'd see certain from women's soldiers, they actually have skirts for them. So there's already accommodations.
To take it to the next level then, we live in a world full of technology where missiles and all sorts of things are controlled by computers.
Mm-hmm.
Could a woman sit behind a computer and control weapons?
Oh, interesting. I never thought about that.
So that's much more disconnected. But she's still ultimately...
Right, would it still violate the prohibition of bearing arms? So I think what this might get to, by the way, Ramosha Feinstein, we weren't going to get to this, but he basically there's a question that comes up. Is the Isser of Lo Yilvash, this goes back to the shaving question, is it an Isser in the Totsah, the result, or in the Maisa, in the action? Yeah. So maybe the action she's doing is not particularly masculine, but the effect it has is an act of war, which is a masculine pursuit, as we'll see. So that's a very good application of this halacha. Can anyone think of any other applications of where Lo Yilvash might apply nowadays? Yeah, Josh.
I mean, just like straight up cross-dressing.
Right. So of course, straight up cross-dressing. So you know, there's this. Usually, I don't take. I try not to take. Well, actually, just cover. I do take positions on things more easily. But
this will be posted online.
Yeah. This is something that's like unequivocally fits into the pasuk of a toeva. There's something apparently I learned called a drag queen, which is I didn't know what it was at the time, but it's men who dress up as women in a promiscuous fashion, I might add, and I'm not exactly sure what they do, but it's probably nothing good. But apparently there's been a thing lately where they bring drag queens, these men who dress up as women, to libraries to do story time with little children. Yeah, exactly. That's people violating cross-dressing. And again, like we could talk about people who like might actually have gender dysphoria and what the solution is. It's totally Ezra about it, but it's not so posh. That deserves its own share. But this is more like a gaudy, ostentatious promotion of breaking gender norms rather than, you know, someone just like, look, on the side, they need to work out what they need to work out. This is like Dafka trying to break down any sense of gender norms and doing it in a promiscuous fashion as well. That's my understanding, at least. Just from like the Wall Street Journal articles I've read of it. Maybe I need to read the New York Times. There might be like a more positive take on it. There was another another more subtle application. This I have to be very careful because the YU Torah audience will get this reference if I say specifics. There's a certain area where I grew up, roughly on Long Island, where certain areas there's like a culture where the men will wear particularly tight pants that are akin to leggings, and Rachmana Litzlan will dress up their little boys that way as well. Now, of course, there's a question. I mean, if a woman go around just wearing leggings, also that's a tznius issue. But I think from a Lo Yilvash standpoint, men wearing particularly tight pants, that also might be of a more feminine.
Are they wearing it in order to wear women's clothing, or are they just wearing it because they want to wear it?
Very good. So now,
a lot of jogging clothing or biking clothing, even skiing, are all tighter clothing.
So we make fun of my little brother who goes biking a lot. He like bikes all the way out to Montauk, and like he has these shorts where you can see like it's body form fitting. So this is actually important. It's not on the sheet, but I'll bring it in. Rav Adi Yosef addressed the question of women wearing pants. So it's a machlokas between him and I think it's the Chalkas Yaakov, I want to say. One of the Ashkenazi Achronim, where if I remember correctly, I think it's the Chalkas Yaakov who says pants are inherently masculine, which I was told historically women may have started wearing pants because they wanted to not be so obvious when they're menstruating. I'm not exactly sure. I need to look into that. But Rav Avadi Yosef says, you know what? It's possible pants are not intrinsically masculine nowadays, but you still have – Lo Yilvash is one Isser. You have a second Isser to reckon with, which is just general Hilchos Tznius. So you might not be violating cross-dressing, but it still might be a violation of Tznius. What's the context of this tshuva? The tshuva is it was a question if girls are going to be wearing is it better that they wear pants or that they wear short skirts? It was something like that, if I remember. So he's like, okay, this is like a lesser of two evils question at this point.
That's a common discussion when schools look at dress codes, when modern Orthodox schools look at dress codes. A lot of pants are a lot more tznias than the tight pencil skirts. Even if it's below the knee, tight pencil skirts are very much not tznias. And
right.
So that's a discussion here in Stanford.
Well, I hear bicultural is finally introducing some standards to the upper school, so you know, incremental improvements are happening. I'm not familiar with the different varieties of skirts naturally, but I understand that there are some that are less sneeze than others, I would imagine. So yes, absolutely.
One more interesting thing to maybe delve into is the locale. Like, where is this?
Very good.
But can she wear it in her own house?
So Sam asked the following question. Maybe, two things. One is there an issur doing the privacy of your home? Rambam talks about the issur of doing in the privacy of your home. Many sources indicate as such. It's possible it might only be midrabbanan, it might only be rabbinical if you do it in your own house. And part of it might be dependent on what the reasoning behind the issur is, which we'll get to soon. So hold that for a moment. Okay, but another thing, Sam, that I think you're alluding to is, and this is really the fundamental question we have to reckon with, are standards subject to change? Pants is a perfect example. One place I could go to, I go to Borough Park, where all the Hasidim are. Women clearly don't wear pants there. But if I come to Stanford, many
wear stockings.
That's another good cut. Exactly. So it seems that it could change based on the culture, or can it? I would say it's pretty obvious that certain things do change over time. But the question we have to ask ourselves is, what are the parameters for that? And I want you to think about, are there certain things that perhaps cannot change? Certain things were just intrinsically masculine, intrinsically feminine, and no matter how much the culture says otherwise, they remain the same.
A lot of the kings and nobles of, like the 14th, 15th, 16th centuries, you know, they wore leggings.
Mm-hmm. Right, and think about in Scotland today, right? Your neighbors, Daniel. Oh. They wear the kilts.
Right, yeah.
It's Scottish, not the Irish. Scottish. Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm remembering a Gemara about the Kohanim going up or running up.
Very good.
On a Mizbeach. Yeah. Because they're wearing a robe, nothing underneath. A robe is basically like a long dress.
Very good. They have a tunic. Yeah. That's what they wore back then. They wore tunics. And you look in the Torah where it outlines what the Big Day Kahuna are. A tunic is what they wore. And you look in all the picture books of Avraham Avinu, when he's not wearing a strimal, he has the tunic on.
A simla, I think, is a tunic. Like when it talks about
interesting.
A Shem and Yefes taking the simla and putting their father. It sounds like it's some kind of drapery.
I always understood simla to be more of a catch-all, more general term, but maybe.
I mean, yeah, when Bnei Yisrael were leaving Egypt, it's like, you know.
All right, Sam, we need to bring out all of your... We need to bring out all of your heretical academic books and we can figure this out. Okay, well, I want to cover some sources. And Hanukkah's over, so Purim, that means Purim is around the corner, right? We started learning Maseches Megillah this week in our weekly Gemara Shir, and Purim's coming up, so it's really on my mind right now. Purim is one of the classical flashpoints for this issue. There is a machlokus between Mahari Mintz and the Bach. So Mahari Mintz, you look in source number 3, he basically argues, and this won't get to our fundamental question, but just important background information and a good tie-in for Purim. Mahari Mintz is basically, I should have put the beginning of the tshuva on here as well. He says that many people cross-dress on Purim. And he says, look, I don't need to justify this because Gedolim and Tovim, many, those who are greater than me, have already, you know, not protested this. They're okay with it.
I'm looking for my picture of when I did that.
What was that? What was that, Shia?
I'm looking for my picture of when I did that.
Oh.
We'll examine it.
So the question was, when Shia cross-dressed on Purim, did he violate the Issur D'oraisa of Lo Yilvash? And possibly, who knows, maybe get Malkus for it, actually. Okay, I'm not going to administer it. Now, the Mahari Mintz makes the argument that it's mutter. Why? One of his arguments is, Mishum Simchas Purim, because it enhances the Simcha of the day. Source number 3. His argument is as follows. There's actually, the Riva points out, you look beautiful, Shia.
We don't need to post that to why you...
You actually look more Jamaican in that photo than anything else, I'll say. But we won't post that to why you, Torah. Now,
I never read it to kids in libraries.
So the Mahari Mintz says that, look, maybe we have to take another factor into the equation. It's based on Tosos. It goes earlier. then maybe one's kavana matters. When I cross-dress, maybe it depends on why I'm wearing clothing of the opposite gender. For instance, if I'm wearing it not because I want to pretend to be a woman, but because, and not for anything promiscuous, but look, it's Purim, and I want to do a costume. I want to be, I don't know, I want to be Alice in Wonderland. What are female characters that people dress up as? Chai, what did you dress up as when you dressed up?
For a woman.
Okay.
Sorry.
A base Yaakov girl. Okay. So he was trying to show everyone else how to dress, right? That's what Shia was doing. What?
A hot Connie.
Okay.
Wow.
So
I have never heard that before. About.
That was the pencil skirt. Right,
yeah. I have never heard that term before. Really? That's funny.
Yeah, it's from...
It goes around the YU community.
Yeah.
I'm University of Hartford. What can I say?
Okay. All right. So, it depends on one's kavana. Let's say one's kavana is Mishum Simchas Purim to enhance the day of Purim. Listen to this fascinating argument he makes. He says that one's allowed to steal on Purim. He quotes the Riva. Yeah, you guys ever hear this one? This is a good tidbit. Okay. One is, it's like the purge, basically. For like 24 hours, you could steal and do whatever. Just steal. Not murder. Well, actually, oh yeah, exactly right. So the story, of course, right, brings him back to life. So, okay, maybe. So he says, look, why do we allow it? Look in the Marimet. Mishum Simchas Purim, lo ikri gezel, kim she'eno os amanas ligzol laraviach, el mishum Simchas Purim. Because you're not doing it to profit off people. You're not doing it maliciously, but it's part of the game. You know, you have a pekalach. I snatch your pekalach. You got a candy. I try to grab it from you. But it's part of the game.
You have to give it back, or you can keep it.
It seems like you can keep it. So
how much?
Oh, I don't know.
Can you steal someone's iPad, or is it only stealing like a pen?
Yeah, it's a little unclear to me what the parameters are. But his point is, he extrapolates. Hachinami yildi dan. So it's over here. Look, if we could put a moratorium on stealing, then so too we could do so on the Isser of Lo Yilvash. Now, the Bach, and turn the page, takes issue with this. Number one, the reason we can waive theft for 24 hours is because of Dina Demuchus Edina. Not Demuchus Edina, kind of under those parameters. You know, we have the power to waive certain things. Hefker, Beis and Hefker, that's what I meant. Beis Din has the power to waive monetary issues. Lo Yilvash, you know, Beis Din can't come along and say, you're allowed to eat, you're allowed to cook meat and milk together. It's only monetary matter, so it's not analogous. The second issue he takes is, now I'll read it inside, he says, De'av mash os mishum simchas mitzvah eno domel osik tili natsal menatzar. When do we allow someone to cross-dress? You can only do so when you have no other choice. You're going out on a walk, and you need to get home, and you don't have a coat with you. So you ask your wife, can I take your coat? Because I don't have a coat to protect myself from the rain. So in exigent circumstances, in a shas ad chak, where you have no other recourse, that's when you're allowed to do it. However, you can't just willy-nilly decide to cross-dress. What we see from here, this is my own observation, I'm sure someone else says it, is that whereas the Maharimitz said, sees it as a hutra, that as long as you don't have kavana to cross-dress, l'shem cross-dressing, to be like a woman, you're doing it for Purim, as long as it's for an alternative purpose, then you don't violate lo yilvash. Whereas the Bach understands, any time we permit you to cross-dress, you're actually violating lo yilvash, it's a dechuya. Just because of overriding concerns to protect yourself, we're willing to wave it to the side.
It still feels strange though, right? Like, on Purim, you could dress up as so many different things. Mm-hmm. But to specifically choose to dress up as a woman or to wear women's clothing.
Yeah. Ask the gentleman hosting over here.
I did it for the money, okay?
What I'm saying is, how can we permit it when there's so many other things? There's no need to dress up as a woman on Purim.
Oh, very good. And that's exactly, Danny, your point is what the Bach says. Because he says, but to dress up for a wedding or for Purim to cross-dress, kvar efshir bahar b'minei simcha. There's so many other ways to enhance the simcha of Purim v'lo yavar alav d'liyavash without having to get into the question of violating lo yavash. So exactly, your point's what the Bach says. You're on the same boat as him. The Daniel Bach school of thought. Anyway, that's the Purim tie-in over here. Now, what I want to raise is, even though in general it seems that we see from here Lo Yilbash is a little bit flexible. As long as I have kavana, according to my remits, I do it for simcha purposes, for Purim, or I do it to protect myself from the rain, Lo Yilbash is not a problem. So we already see it's a little bit flexible. However, you know, I guess I'll add on. It's not on the source sheet here, but very briefly, the question is, can it change? The Rashba says the Lo Yilvash, whatever is masculine and feminine, stays that way and doesn't change.
From what point?
Like basically from the times of the Gemara, it would seem. Which is a great question. Like why we choose? Is again, it seems arbitrary. What the Rashba basically says is, I wish I put it on the sheet here. He says just because a bunch of people sin, or a lot of people sin, doesn't change halacha. So just because a lot of men one day in one society decide to start wearing skirts, doesn't all of a sudden make it a permissible thing to do. He was saying this in reference to shaving one's armpits and genitalia. That's considered to be a feminine thing to do. The Gemara in Nazir, in a continuation, it says that there was this guy who they're going to give malchus to. They're going to give him lashes. When they uncovered the torso of his body to give him the lashes, and they saw he had armpit hair, they said, oh, this guy's a chaver. He's a learned guy. He's an observant person. We're not giving him malchus. What do you mean? Because you have armpit hair? I'm like, oh, wow, I guess I get out of malchus. I have armpit hair too. What I meant was that people back then weren't keeping the halachos. This guy apparently did. Therefore, they didn't give him malchus. But the Rashba says it doesn't change. However, the Ron and basically everybody else says that it changes with time. Interestingly, the Prisha says, who do we look to for reference? We look to the non-Jews. We look to the general culture around us. And that's how we figure out what's masculine standard and what's a feminine standard of a mode of dress. However, Rav Moshe Sternbach, I think he tones this down a little bit. He says, no, who do we look to figure out what's appropriate and what's not appropriate? The question he was addressing in the tshuva was if women are allowed to smoke. He says, of course they're not allowed to. And the reason is, lo yilvash. Now, he says, the women who you do see smoking, those are not the tsnuos. The modest women, the God-fearing women, they don't smoke. Which you might say is a little bit circular, but apparently the women who are not keeping other areas of halacha are the ones who are smoking. Most women who are observant, they are not smoking. So when do we make changes? When the tsnuos, when the God-fearing people make changes. The issue is, who's going to be Nachshon Ben Ami Nadav? Who's going to be the first person to make the change? So yeah, it's a little bit circular, you know what I mean?
Equivalent to saying world leaders, kings and queens, that kind of thing, and saying, what do they do? Right?
Kings and, what do you mean? Oh, this is like the JFK thing when he didn't wear a hat and then everyone stopped wearing hats?
For example, I'm just thinking like the royal family, for example, they ride horses all the time because that's what rich people do, I guess, right? And when you ride a horse, there's no way you're wearing a skirt. You wear, whatever it's called.
Right.
Some kind of trousers, right?
Yeah.
So and that's, you know, royalty doing it. So if they're doing it, and they very much tend to conform to gender roles, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of implies that maybe trousers aren't such a masculine thing, right? If they're willing to do it in certain situations.
Yeah, look, if Her Majesty says it's okay, it's okay, right?
Also, like, regarding smoking, the royal family definitely smoke, or definitely did smoke, but it wasn't such a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, the women also?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Okay, where Sternbach would probably take issue with that. Yeah. I'm sorry, it's my...
There's another riot in the red, I think, is we see about, like, women covering their hair, right? So it's pretty clear in halacha that you shouldn't say certain tefillos in front of a woman with uncovered hair, except mm-hmm. some of the Achronim come and say that actually now since, you know, women in society generally don't cover their hair, there may be room to...
Yeah, the classic Aruch HaShulchan. Right.
Sorry to
conform
to type and bring up an
Arashashulcha. Right. So you're saying in terms of the isser of a woman uncovering her hair, the issue of, or rather, the mitzvah to cover her hair doesn't change with time, but men's perception of women who don't cover their hair might change, and that might be. Right, but just to clarify, the Aruch HaShulchan's point wasn't to be permit women not to cover their hair, but it was for men to say that men are not affected the same way.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. You're right. He was never giving a heads up for women to leave their harem covered. It was about men, right? Saying we can change, we can give, we can permit men to do something based on what the oilum does.
I see what you mean. Okay, I see what you mean. Your point being is it's analogous in the sense that we look at society around us and we make certain assumptions based on that. Right. I hear the analogy. I agree. Now, okay. What we see right now, let's move forward. What we see here is that Lo Yilvash seems to be flexible. It can change with time. It can change with locale. It can change based on my individual kavana as well. But there are certain things which seem to be, according to some, fundamentally masculine in nature. So, if you look in source number 5...
Can I just ask one more question?
Sure.
So, is there... When we talk about it changing based on your personal kavana, right? Is there no issue of Marsai in there that somebody might see you and not realize that your personal kavana is something and they might think, oh, stop, I could just dress like a woman?
Right, so Evan, that's Evan speaking, right? Yeah. Evan raised the question of Marsai, and I would say that there might not be Marsai in the cases, at least, that we discussed. Number one, if it's raining outside... So it's clear that you're wearing that coat to protect yourself from the rain. If it's Purim, well, that's very clear that you're not wearing it because you want to be a woman, but you're wearing it because it's Purim and people just dress up as ridiculous things.
Still questionable, though.
You're saying...
Because, again, like, there's all this many things...
It's Marasayan because we think you should really hold, like, the Bach and not be doing it.
Well, you're specifically choosing of all the things in the world to dress up as a woman.
Yeah,
right.
But like back then, there, I don't know. There's like
some, but are you doing
how many
it,
things?
Are you doing it for this?
Yeah, you didn't have like
doing it as a joke.
I mean, right, you didn't have like all the Avengers to dress up as back then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so Josh makes a good point. Like how you know, like you could just go to Party City and pick up a costume back then. Like, well, you know, if you wanted to like look silly, what were you gonna do? All right, so you put on your wife's shaitel instead.
Right.
I don't think it's shaitels back then.
Right.
The Indian of Anapo, like. Oh yeah, I guess it's actually
okay.
Right, right. Well, my thesis, and I, so basically, you'll see this actually appear in writing, hopefully, in two places. One in Lehrer House, and one in the Shalavim, actually, in their Shali Orot. They asked me to write something up, so I put an abridged version of this in here, and one of the lines I ended on was, even according to Ma'ari Mintz, V'nahabahu should only be one day a year. Shouldn't be every day. Shouldn't be topsy-turvy every day. Okay, now, are there certain things that are fundamentally masculine in nature? Look at the Gemara number 5. Elahai Tanahu Titania, Micha Bas Kushi, that's Michal, the daughter of Shaul, Haisa Menachas Tefillin Vlo Micha Bachachamim. She wore tefillin, right? Everyone thought, oh, Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. Well, I got someone a little bit earlier in Rashi's daughters. I got Michal Bas Shaul, going all the way back to the times of the Bible. So, Michal Bas Shaul wore tefillin, and the Chachamim, the rabbis, did not protest it. Now, not protesting something is different than sanctioning something, right? They didn't say they endorsed it. Lo Michu. So it's possible.
I guess we also need to say for certain about women not wearing tefillin to begin with, right?
That's right.
It's a Shesman Groma thing, right?
Yeah, so women are pater from tefillin.
Right, and that's a rabbinical thing, right?
No, it's Dereisa.
Shesman Groma's Dereisa?
In fact, we actually learn from tefillin as a paradigm.
Okay.
We use tefillin actually as a paradigm to, yeah. So that's their rights that women are pater from tefillin.
Okay.
Now the question is, they might be exempt from tefillin, right, exactly. but can they voluntarily do it? Now most things we say women can voluntarily do. Mm-hmm. Women have voluntarily listened to shofar. That's become a strong minhag. Women will voluntarily sit in a sukkah to eat. So what's the issue with tefillin? Presumably lo yilvash. Mm-hmm. Now. It's unclear if the Gemara is endorsing it or... Oh, no, it's not certain. I'll show you why it's not. Well, the Sri Ish says, as well as others, look, source number 6. Why was it mutter for her to wear tefillin? Yeah, you know what? It really would have been an Isser of Lo Yilvash, but why did she wear tefillin? Not to cross-dress, but in order to do it, to fill the mitzvah of tefillin. She just wanted... And there's a whole sign that we could talk about, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the question about women wearing talisim, or Soloveitchik, where he told the woman, you're not doing it for the sake of the mitzvah, you're doing it because you want to feel like this. Okay, there's a lot to elaborate on. We'll do a separate shiur on the evils of feminism another time. I did that as a shiur, actually, in Plainview, about women holding Sifrei Torah. I concluded that it's 100% mutter for women to hold and dance with the Sefer Torah, but we use it as a case study to talk about social issues and Judaism. So, however, you look in Targum Rabbeinu Yonasan. Now, Targum Yonasan on Chumash. Sam, what are you going to tell us about Targum Yonasan on Chumash?
It's unclear whether
It's targeting Yerushalmi, right? It would seem to be targeting Yerushalmi because we're told, the Gemara Maseches Megillah actually, just got up to it last week with my folks, right at the beginning, it says that Yonas and Ben Uziel wrote a translation of Nach, of the well, not Nach, actually, of Nevi'im. He wanted to do Ksuvim also, but God didn't let him. He said, you did enough already. Unkelus did the Torah. So who's this? Perish, Targum Yerushalmi. Okay, doesn't matter. Targum Yonatan for our purposes henceforth. Targum Yonatan says, when he translates, now, Targum Yonatan won't just literally translate Psukim always. He'll sometimes add in a little bit of elucidation. So what does he say on the first pasuk that we looked at of Lo Yilvash? Luya Gluyin Ditsitsis Utfilin Dehinun Tikune Gever Al Issa. What should not be on a woman? He singles out tzitzis and tefillin. So when you want to talk about what's the quintessential example of something a woman should not be wearing, it's tzitzis and tefillin, which leads many to understand Targum Rabbeinu Yonasan that tzitzis and tefillin are fundamentally masculine clothing. In fact, actually, Rabbi Mordechai Karbach, not related to Rosh Shlomo Karbach as far as I know, so don't worry about that. So in Chavetzelis HaSharon, it's a little bit lumdish, he says that actually when a woman wears tefillin, dafka for the sake of the mitzvah, unlike the Sridiyesh and others who assume that that was a permissible way to wear tefillin because she's not doing the cross, she's doing for the mitzvah, he said, no, that's specifically the issue. Because who was the mitzvah given to? To men. For women to wear it for l'shem mitzvah, for the sake of performing mitzvah tefillin, is dafka the issue, because then they're dafka trying to emulate and imitate the form of wearing that men do. So actually doing it l'shem mitzvah is the biggest problem if they do it. If they want to do it for dress-up, it might even be better than doing l'shem mitzvah, ironically.
Just a quick question. I'm thinking of the third paragraph of the Shema, but where is it specifically said, where are we given the specific mitzvah of tzitzis, and where does it say that it's specifically for men?
So, third paragraph of Shema.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, when plural, we have plural masculine, we have plural feminine, but when it's plural everybody, it's done with masculine. So you can make the argument that it's everybody.
You could, but again, back to what Daniel pointed out, and Evan just said, it's mitzvah seishes man grama. It's a time-bound mitzvah. True. It's our day clothing, not nighttime clothing. It's machlok, it's Rambam and Rush. What if I wear daytime clothing during the night? Should I still have to wear tzitzis on the four-corner car? We'll get into that now.
What's the source for seishes man grama?
It's a drusha in the Gemara. I think actually tefillin, if I remember correctly, I think tefillin actually is used as the paradigm to call a Torah kula.
But it's not actually in the Torah itself, right?
It doesn't say in the Torah, time-bound mitzvahs men only.
Right.
It's a Kiddushin, it talks about it, in other places as well. Mm-hmm. But it's explicit Gemaras that darshan it.
And it's treated as a deraisa then?
Oh, yeah, this is like this is deraisa.
Even though it's not in the Torah.
Oh, that's a lot of things. Think about the 39 Malachos on Shabbos. Okay. You know, you'll have the Isser of lighting a fire, mm-hmm. maybe Hotzah mentioned in the Torah, but everything else, there's a lot of things that are Doraisa, but they're not mentioned explicitly in the mm-hmm. Torah. The Nafkamina is when you're giving rebuke to somebody, some say, it says in the Gemara, you don't rebuke someone if they won't listen, but some Rishon point out, if it's something that's explicitly written in the Torah, there you have to rebuke no matter what, whereas other Torah rites not written in the Torah, you don't have to rebuke something they won't listen. That might be a nafkamina, whether it's written or not.
Eating milk and meat.
Right, so Bas Rechav, what? It's mentioned three times, and...
That's why.
Right, it's mentioned three times in the Torah. Oh, very good, right. So Sam says, Bas Rechav, it says the Isser of cooking, but we learn the Isser of eating and being nana and benefiting, Chazal figured out from the three mentionings of Lo Savash Diba Chalev Imo. Very good. So there's many, many things that are not mentioned explicitly in the Torah, and that's why we have Rabbinic Judaism, that's why we have Chazal, who figured out all these things are not mentioned explicitly in the Torah, but through their tradition and infinite wisdom, that's how we got halacha.
And that's why we can't eat chicken parm.
Exactly. Well, actually, the Chazal, I think Rabbi Akiva Shita, they added it on as a gether.
Chicken does not look like beef. I'm just saying. It does not look like beef.
Well, it's Midr Rabbanan. It's not Midr Reis.
I know. But it's Midr Rabbanan because it's Marsayim.
Well, not more sign, but, you know, like, look, you have meat and chicken together at the same meal. It's a normal... Okay, another share. Now, Targum Rabbeinu Yonasan, if you assume it's the same person, in Oh yes, Josh. Yeah.
So just real quick. So just going back to what Shai is saying. So what is the, in the third paragraph? Like what are the words used that are alluding to?
There's no explicit mention, right? If you just look at that, you know, I don't think anywhere it says that it has to be a man. But we have a general principle that any time-bound mitzvah is given to men, not to women. Ramosha Feinstein unapologetically explains in the tshuva, the one about women wearing talisim, where he says the idea is, look, if the Torah really expects women to be in the household, raising children, cooking the meals, and being that keres habayis, then it's unfair for the Torah
that men shouldn't cook?
Only if it's for their business. So if the Torah has that expectation of women, it's not also fair to expect them to be going to minyan every day, to be worrying about time-bound mitzvahs. And that's actually, in the Gemara Kiddushin talks about how once a woman marries a man, she becomes exempt from most obligations to her father, kibud av aim, because many times the interests of serving her husband will be overlapping in conflict with being able to serve her father. Mm. So it's a similar idea. That basically, they have to be available to raise the family.
I realize we're going off on a bit of a tangent here, but a conversation for another time. But
yeah.
I understand the whole concept of Shizman Grom. Okay, yeah. Fine. But to say that women are not chayav in doing these things, is okay, cool. I get it. You're giving them a break, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to say that they're not allowed to do it is a completely different thing.
Ah, very good.
So fine, so they don't have to wear tefillin. But then to say, no, you're not allowed to
be
wear
tefillin. Should be reshus. You're saying, right. So, Danny's point of, we need a little bit of nuance over here. Not everything is a binary. Very good line to use. Not everything is either, you know, your chayiv or usser to do. But something could be a reshus. Something could be permissible. Like Ramosha Feinstein says, making aliyah. It's a good thing to do if you can, but you don't have to. That's what I always keep in my back pocket. That Ramosha Feinstein. It's a cue, as he says. Now,
but
so... Yeah, exactly. You know, right, Evan's right. You know, the women and tefillin idea is its own separate shear. The gufnaki considerations, it's really deserving of its own shear. I want to go to source number 8. We're talking about Ani Yonason, so we might be familiar with the story of Yael killing Sisera. And so Yael, if you notice, she uses a tent peg. Now, Sisera would just come from the battlefield. Presumably, there was a sword, a battle axe, some sort of bona fide weapon that she could have used to kill him. Why did she dafka use this tent peg instead? So, Targum Yonason says, Tehemes matachsib bisfar oraisa demosha lo yehevi sikun zayin tigvar al isisa. Because she was concerned that by using an actual weapon, she would violate the iser of lo yilvash. Mm. So, of course, it was pikuach nefesh. If she didn't have a chance to grab something else, she'd be allowed to kill him in self-defense. But since she had time on her hands, he was already weakened, he was already asleep. So since she could use something that wasn't an actual weapon to kill him, therefore she used it not to violate lo yilvash.
Why would she have an actual weapon in her tent if women are not allowed to bear arms?
I know, because Sisera, who just came from the battlefield, presumably was wearing some kind of weapon. So that's the point. So Ramosha finds... that's the point. So basically there are certain things possibly, tefillin, tzitzis, and weaponry, that might be intrinsically masculine and do not change with time. It's possible also the Gra talks about what we talked about earlier, not shaving one's genitalia or armpits also might be intrinsically feminine, and that might not change with time either. The Gra indicates that. Now, Ramosha Feinstein, he was asked by, is source number 9, he was asked by his grandson-in-law, I think you call him, Rav Shabtai Rappaport, so he married Rav Tendler's daughter, actually met him at the Shiva home, that's when I first met him in person, but I only learned the tshuva a few weeks later, so I couldn't ask him about it at the time. So Rav Shabtai Rappaport asked him, women who are living in the Shtachim, women who are living in the Gush area and the settlements, where they will be attacked when they leave their yeshuv, are they allowed to bear arms to defend themselves? Ramosha said, I don't want to get into the whole tshuva, but basically in that tshuva, it seems or Shaptai Rapport suggests that perhaps the actual deed of going out to war is inherently masculine. Ramosha says a woman going out to war in the military, back to your point, Daniel, does not violate lo yilvash. However, he quotes the Gemara Kiddusha, which says, "Alavadai hanashei labnei melchama ninhu," that women do not go out to war. So it doesn't seem to violate lo yilvash, but he says it seems to be fundamentally against Jewish beliefs in general. So it doesn't violate a halachic prohibition, but it gets to perhaps a hashkafic issue. And this is where the transition I want to take, which is, Rabbi Isai, what's so bad about cross-dressing? Yeah. We've been working this whole time talking about the parameters of the
Levash. I would say it was very refreshing.
Right, so Shai enjoyed it. So now, what's the... Guys, like, we've been talking about the parameters here of Lo Yilvash, but let's ask the fundamental question. Let's get to the essence of the matter. What's wrong with cross-dressing?
Ki toya v'as Hashem.
Okay, so it says, so Sam points out, it says in the Pasuk, that's a toeva, it's an abomination. That's serious indictment. We got to take it seriously. But let me ask you, let me push back. Why is it an abomination? I understand the Torah says it's an abomination, but what's the reason it's an abomination to God to cross-dress?
Even if I can probably come up with answers, but...
You probably know where I'm going.
We're all waiting.
There's no reason to. I mean...
It's so you want to say it's a chok?
Yeah, I mean, like, same thing by homosexuality. It's called, like, you know...
Oh, you're taking the progressive monorthodox approach.
Well, no, I would argue on that. Okay. I would say it's easier to make an argument against homosexuality than against cross-dressing.
Do say more.
Well, because I would say, for example, you know, if one wanted to make an argument against homosexuality, they can make arguments about, like, you know, running families and that kind of thing, and you can't reproduce and all that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
That's possibly an argument. With cross-dressing, if someone dresses up as a woman and still behaves like a complete Eved Hashem and does all the mitzvahs, what's the harm?
I'm saying it doesn't matter because it's like lo machshavo sa machshavo seichem. Like it's
right. So you are correct, Sam. I mean, obviously, look, if God says it's usher, it's usher. But perhaps the Tami HaMitzvos might tell us. I'll tell you why I want to bring in Tami HaMitzvos. Because what we see from here tonight is it may, with the exception of tzitzis, tefillin, and weaponry. Okay, maybe the issue does come up more often than we think. But other than those three distinct issues...
This is Stanford. All three of them come up.
All three of them come up. Yeah, I'm going to give this in shul, and there's going to be people with their daughters in the IDF who are going to get really upset. Watch this happen. But you know what? Look, the Torah is the Torah, and people just got to deal with it, okay? I mean, I'll try to share...
in this town that also have a gun in their purse.
Okay. How many of them do you think are showing up to the shir?
Tonight?
No, at Shul, between Mincha Marv. I don't know if does Lisa Michelson have a pistol? No, okay.
They are very Republican.
They are.
Are we concluding then that women can't fight an idea?
My personal conclusion, I would just say, is that I think in combat units it's problematic.
Yeah.
I would say other units, I don't see why it would be, at least from a Yilvash standpoint.
Combat unit, so they're not being snares in front of men.
But Shai, that gets back to the point where Vadi Yosef. There's two issues here. There's the issue of Lo Yilvash, and there's the issue of Tznias. So we might circumvent Tznias, but not circumvent Lo Yilvash. We might circumvent Lo Yilvash, but not circumvent Tznias. But this is really the question I want to get to. Yes, there's a basis to be makel. There's a basis to be lenient. We, you know, maybe my kavana is one way, maybe society changes. But the question is, given the fact that there's room to be machmir, room to be makel, what should influence me to lean one way or the other? I would think the question we should ask is, does the reasoning still apply nowadays? If the reasoning no longer applies, we probably will just exploit every leniency in the book if it doesn't really resonate anymore. Whereas if the reasoning does resonate, I would argue, and it's the argument I'm going to make, that the Yisrael Yilvash is more needed than ever, especially the message of Lo Yilvash. And I'll say as follows. Check out Sefer Mitzvahs. The two usual mitzvahs that people, reasonings, the rationales for the Yisrael Yilvash is, number one, is either, a guy will dress up as a woman to sneak into the woman's locker room, basically. That's essentially what's happening.
He'll dress up as a woman. That's not what I did it for.
That's not what you did it for, Shai?
Just clear my name.
I didn't say you did. That's
you
okay.
You said usually.
That's one. The other issue, it'll be maybe lead to zima, it'll lead to promiscuity. People will sneak into gender-segregated gatherings, right? Maybe one of you dressed up as a man just to sneak in here. I don't know. The other is that look, it's chukas akum. Basically, and you actually look where it's listed in the Torah. It's listed amongst other things which the pagans did. Rambam talks about in Mor Nevuchim how when they worshipped Venus and Mars, for some reason they cross-dressed. I have no idea why. He quotes his Book of Tam Tam. I thought Tam Tam was a cracker, but Tam Tam. I don't know what the Book of Tam Tam is. Those are the two usual reasons given. Either it will lead to promiscuity or avodah zarah. There is a third reason that most people do not emphasize, but it is well documented, and I put it over here in the Rishonim and in the Achronim. Number one, rapid fire. Look at Ibn Ezra, number 11. He says, what's the reasoning? Look in the bold. Sorry, Nizvah Bavur Tseis L'Mochama Ki Isha Lo Nivrei Skim L'Hakim Azera. Why is this right next to the midst of going out to war? Because women were created in order to have children. Ellipses, many lines skipped. He concludes, and Hashem Yitav Misha Yishana Masa Hashem. And God despises, he abhors, anyone who changes the creation of God, the way God created the world. I mean, God created men and women, and for one to obscure those distinctions is messing with God's blueprint for the world. And unless you think
For that, I would say when a woman, you know, gets old enough that she can't have children anymore, then hey, then she can
bear. So she should be showing up to Minyan then if she's an empty nester. I agree. Source number 12. The Abarbanel says, skipping around, Ki adam roishia nikar be'anushuso ve'isha b'nekevusa. A man should be recognized in his manliness and a woman in her femininity. And he actually says, what's the reasoning? If you look in the Torah, in Devarim, it's listed right next to the mitzvah to help someone pick up their load. Their donkey just collapsed because of the load. You have a mitzvah to help them pick it up. Now, you know, ma'ani shmita etzal har sinai. What does one have to do with the other? The issur of cross-dressing and the mitzvah to help someone pick up their load. The reason is, he says, l'chein ye'usal adm shlo yinaheg minhag hanashim. A man shouldn't be acting, note that, not just dressing, but conducting himself like a woman. Darchein levilti nasim zro la'achav la'asur b'zeh. Because he assumes that a woman will see that and she'll be like, you know, too dainty to help someone pick up their load. Gird your loins. And help those who are in need. In other words, he says, be a gentleman, be a man, wear your muscles, pick up that load, help that person who's in need. I don't think it means women don't want to do chesed. But he's saying it's like, this is like a burly blue-collar work that you got to do. So he says this is a man's work, and a man shouldn't shirk his responsibility. Then, look at Rabbeinu Bachaye. This gets to your point, Daniel, about shaving. What's the reasoning that a man is not supposed to destroy his facial hair? There are many reasons given. Rabbeinu Bachaye says, what's the point of having facial hair? G'day la'avdilo b'min hanakeva. To distinguish men from women. And he says, actually, again, that to destroy one's facial hair is to destroy Maisa Bereishis, that God created the world in a certain order. He intended men to be men, women to be women. And to uproot that is really an affront to God. It's an affront to how God created the world. And this reflects, actually, in the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, source number 14. A man who his wife had died and he wasn't able to nurse his child. What happened? And he couldn't afford a formula or a wet nurse either. What happened? God magically gave him breasts that he was able to provide milk for his child. Amrav Yosef, look how great this man is that God performed a miracle for him. Amar Le Abaye respond, Adarab, on the contrary, how despicable is this man that God had to actually change Seder Bereishis. He had to alter the way of the world in order to help this man in his time of need. Unless you think, by the way, this is just a Talmudic idea, just an idea in the Rishonim, God forbid to say it's archaic. I don't know, you go all the way to Rishim Shimon Fuller Hirsch, you know, almost the modern day. And he comments on the pasuk and says the same thing. I'm not going to read the whole thing out loud, but one tidbit. Where's the line I was looking for? He says, it seems to us as clear that according to the way of taking it, the prohibition is not so much disguising one's sex by dressing in female clothes as forbidding each sex that which is more specifically pertaining to the nature of the opposite one. A man is just as little to get himself up with powder and paint and lipstick, which is all quite in order for women to do, and is in accordance with feminine nature, as a woman is to appear in a profession which belongs to the nature of men. In other words, the way Rav Hirsch understood it, as there are certain things that men do, there are certain things that women do, and that's what Lil Yilvash comes to inform us about.
So would it be an issue for, say, someone going on TV and, you know, they powder up their face so that there's no glare and this and that?
Yeah, that's up for debate as well.
One could look. They're not doing it to look feminine. They're doing it because
interesting.
It's for their profession.
Right. So I think many of these things, what you're going to have to answer is, it's culturally acceptable. It's not inherently feminine. Any person who goes on TV, they bring them to the dress-up room and they powder them up. I don't know exactly what they do, but they do whatever they do for men. And that's the standard. It's not a feminine thing. It's a gender-neutral thing to do.
Well, I mean, then there's also the idea. You say that a man shouldn't wear women's clothing, women shouldn't wear men's clothing. Nowadays, you just take the example of pants. I'm not saying I have one, my opinion's one way or the other, but there are very feminine pants, and there's, you know, masculine pants or this and that. Like, there's pants that are not meant to be worn by a man. I've seen them on men. They're not meant to
this
be.
This is what we were talking about earlier. You know, go to certain parts of Orthodox communities in New York, not naming any specifically, and you'll see, like, it's, for some reason, I can't figure out why, it's this weird cultural norm that all these, like, wealthy, more right-leaning Jennings, Orthodox Jews... Yeah, that's a Marissa told me about that term. Jeggings. It's like it's a mix between jeans and leggings, right?
Yeah, but the men wear.
They're not sneakers, though.
Oh, no.
Why sneakers? So you have a problem.
But I'm saying even. Right, for men, maybe it's not only necessarily Yilash, but for men, it's the sneakers also.
Both for men and for women, jeggings. There's no way.
Yeah. So these men are like wearing like pants that are like plastered to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, you can only get away with it if you're like, you know, thin enough. Like if I, you know, stylistically, I couldn't get away with it. I mean, I'm just jealous of the people who are able to. You know, that's on me.
Jealousy
is
against the charm.
Yeah. Thank you,
Shia. Are we talking about workout clothes or just general clothes?
General clothes, like wearing their shirt tucked into their pants, and it's disturbing. And because they dress their kids like that also. Okay, all right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just like, what do you... Oh, so is that... Okay, good. So look at source number 18. You'll see why I think it's so important that even children need to keep these halachos. Number one, you look at source 17. Rav Wozner, Shevet HaLevi, not Shevet HaLevi. Shevet HaLevi. He quotes Rav Yaakov Emden, who says, V'adai tzar she heker achar l'achim mein zarchan l'kev k'shein yiladim. Aye, kids don't hit puberty yet. Nonetheless, you need some way to distinguish between the boys and girls. Look at source number 18, this very obscure book I came by called Dinim Van Hagos Mimaran HaGazon Ish, which is like one of these books that has random anecdotes and records the different Hanhagos of the Chazon Ish. Echa mimi krovav nichnas lebeisa bapurim in bito kabas 4 to 5, kishi levusha bimchnas saim. When I was on Purim, one of the relatives of the Chazon Ish dressed up his daughter in some sort of costume, and she was wearing pants, 4 to 5-year-old daughter. The Hikmah Badavar, Chazon Ish, put his foot down. He said, V'omar, the Chizeh Chinuch, is this how you educate your child? 4 to 5 years old. But is this how you educate your child? She's wearing pants?
So would that imply before the age of Chinuch is okay?
So before the age of Chinuch, like one might say, look, if it's to prevent promiscuity, children before puberty, we shouldn't be worried about that.
It's a onesie.
That is. Well, one second.
I've seen adults wear one.
If the issue is Avodah Zarah, well, maybe there might be an Inyachinah. But if there's a value, but the point being is, if there's a value to distinguishing and saying men are men, women are women. Look, we could debate what the precise, and this is the point I want to make. We could debate, maybe sometimes pants in some places are masculine, sometimes they are feminine. Maybe some places, you know, kilts are for men and skirts, whatever. Maybe it could change over time. But there needs to be some distinction. You see, nowadays there's an ideological movement that says philosophically there should be no distinction between men and women. That is antithetical to the Torah. We could debate, you know, the onesies. We could debate the pants. We could debate, you know, what way to serve in the military. But if you can't get on board with the idea that there's a category called men, a category called women, and there's supposed to be a uniqueness to each one, something that distinguishes them, if you are fundamentally opposed to that, then you're fundamentally opposed to the Lo Yilvash. You're fundamentally opposed to the Torah.
What about Andragos?
Androgynos is dealt with, yeah, it's a whole separate sub-sugya within it with about Androgynos. If you look at the Mishnah and Tzuraim, yeah, Androgynos in some ways we regard as man, some ways as feminine, but we're talking about people who don't have any particular biological...
I'm not trying to play devil's advocate, except you say, well, you have to have one, and you have to have A, and you have to have B, but there is C and D. There are other...
That's true.
Things. You can't just draw a line and go one other.
You're right. Androgynos is dealt with... in this sugya, and in general, androgynous, because we're not sure, you know, it has both genitalia, so in some ways it's like a man, some ways it's like a woman halacha, and the Mishnayos at the end of Zerayim actually outlines in what ways we treat them like a man, and which ways like a woman.
In modern medicine, when that does happen, like the parents will, like doctor will be like, hey, this is what's going on. And then the parents will choose.
Oh, really?
Well,
even if you just let nature take its course, by the time they hit puberty, one will take over.
One will take over. But
you only need a 30-year-old person.
Yeah, well,
who has both.
It does happen in medicine. It's rare, but it does happen in medicine where, like, the testicles will be inside the woman.
There's a tshuva that said yes on that very topic. Yeah. What did they say? I think they said that there was like just a little bit of testicle. I don't really say what that means. Like, I don't know how to like to give you the idea. I don't know how to spell it out, but essentially what they did was they surgically removed the. Yeah. But I mean, I think you know nowadays you could check the chromosomes also. Like if the person has XY chromosomes, they're a man. If they have XX, they're a woman. Yeah, I would think that would be a tell. And I think actually in that tshuva it talks about the chromosomes as well. I think it was XX, but I could be wrong. I put a shiur together on gender reassignment surgery in halacha, and we looked at that tshuva.
The Gemara brings up Tovdin Androgynos, I think more for kind of theoretical constructs than that very prevalent population.
It's not prevalent, but it does happen.
It happens, but statistically, it's not a societal movement of let's get everyone to be kind of like understand gender fluidity, and there's no, you can identify as a male if you're a female.
Well, it's like you could go as how far do you want to go with this? Can women be doctors? Can women be lawyers? And it's typically a male profession.
Can men be nurses?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. I think that's a question we need to be asking as well. And this is something that kind of modern orthodox. I mean, I'll just editorialize a little bit. I think modern orthodox gets a little
bit
inconsistent.
No, watch what you say.
Well, actually, so, because I gave a shiur one time at the shul about women being rabbis, and Toby was on there, and we talked about can women be presidents also. And so she made a good point. She's like, look, we just got to, like, just be consistent. You know, if the issue is mainly sraras having authority, then, you know, if you're opposed to women rabbis, you should be opposed to women presidents. If you're okay with women presidents, you should be okay with women rabbis. And I thought she made a very astute point. You know, if your main issue is women having authority, now, you might argue a rabbi has more authority than a president. Maybe yes, maybe no. My ha'ara, by the way, was that it's lishi tussam. You see, in the more standard from communities where women can't be rabbis, the rabbis actually have real authority. People listen to the rabbis.
You mean in the more women can't be presidents?
Or women can't be rabbis. Or women presidents. But you see in the in like the much more progressive communities where the rabbi doesn't have much authority at all, that's where they have female rabbis, and it's actually mutter for them because the rabbis there don't really have command that much respect. So it actually is lishi tussam. It's consistent because there's not a violation of Sraura. I do need to keep my job. I do need to keep my job, but we don't have a female rabbi.
Does it also depend on how you define authority, though? Because that's just saying, isn't that assuming that there's some superiority in some positions of authority and not in others? Because aren't women the sort of the authorities in the household? Is that the idea?
Well, you know, that's a good question. How we define authority?
Like there's having a certain amount of responsibilities in raising the kids. So, like, it's not really clear to me that being a like
why would you even want to be a president in the first place? Isn't that the question?
Well, most people who become shul presidents, by the way, don't want to. They get forced into it. That's actually what happens.
You can go more extreme though if you want. Talk about the president of America, right?
Yeah.
You know, could you make an argument saying that, well, you know, it's definitely a position of power, so therefore you shouldn't even vote if a woman is running for president, because that's completely against the Torah to do that.
Well, Rav Cook actually...
What if she only wears skirts? Because then she's, you know...
But again, it's Tznius versus Lo Yilvash.
Yeah.
But again, it would seem that... And this is what the Haredi world says. Kol kvoda basmach panima, women are inside. Okay, we're a little bit more makel. They could go out more than once or twice a month, like the Rambam says. We seem to be progressive on that these days. But no, I think they fundamentally understand that women shouldn't be in positions of communal authority. But you go to Agudas Yisrael, women, I don't think women are on the board. Forget about president. I don't think they're on the board. There's a sisterhood.
So they'll say it's forbidden to vote for a female president of America.
Oh. Well, you see, she's a non-Jew usually, so she doesn't have an issur of Yilvash. Okay. But you're saying philosophically,
right,
is an issue to vote for a woman to be in charge. It's an interesting question. Interesting.
The counter-argument would be, there's been queens since forever.
Right.
And queens are sometimes the leader of the country.
Right.
With incredible power.
Well, it says in Sifrei, Melech Velo Malka. Actually, where we get the whole issue of Srara, of women serving positions of authority, actually, because it says... There should be you should appoint a melech over you, a king, and the Sifrei says melech velo malka, king and not a queen.
Okay.
So actually, you want to talk about what the paradigm is. It doesn't say the Sifrei and women shall not be rabbis. It says women shall not be queens,
mm-hmm,
and Rambam extrapolates from there any position of authority. Now the way we get around it, like one mashkiach, by the way, is Rav Moshe said if she reports to a Rav Amasher, to higher authority, then she has, like what you said, responsibility. But she doesn't have ultimate authority on an issue. So by not having ultimate authority, it's fine. Anyway, I want to just conclude. I just want to conclude this.
No, not yet.
Okay, I'll keep the recording on. Sure.
One last thing to circle back. Though.
For the record, yes.
You talk about not being able to bear arms and go to war and not being have power of authority. What about Devorah?
Yeah, so that's that. Tosos deals with that question. So you know what, Shai? What we'll do next time is how about this? Or maybe two times from now, because I'll do a mullet next time before Purim when I'm actually supposed to give. we'll do the question of women serving as rabbis in general. And one of the big questions, like you rightly point out, Shia, is, wait, Devorah was a prophetess, right? We just looked at Shiras Devorah before. And she paskined. She paskined halach, or did she paskin? Oh, what's mean to paskin? So we'll deal with that question.
Right.
We'll deal with that question. But you're right. Devorah is actually a central... how you understand Devorah is one of the central questions in that sukkah. So that's a very good observation, Shai. Anyway, the conclusion is that Lo Yilvash parameters is very flexible, it would seem, but fundamentally it tells us that masculinity is indeed a mitzvah. Now, what the parameters are of masculinity, that could change for most things up for debate, but we fundamentally believe there's something called masculinity, there is femininity, and that's what the Torah desires.
Your kavana is...